is carried by our ships in times of war and peace. And never have we struck it yet in spite of foemen's fine, who cheered our crews and cheered again for showing how to fight. So here's a Coast Guard marching song. All of Captain Joe's people all over the world. I'm broadcasting tonight to you live from a canal boat in Amsterdam. It is 21:30 hours here, which is three bells of the evening watch. The evening watch so treasured by navigators since the invention of the octant and then the sextant, because that's when you get twilight, where you can see both the stars and the horizon at the same time. And so when I was in my short period before I became a captain myself, I was the navigator for the first ship that I went to out of the academy. And the evening watch was always the one that we look forward to. It is 12:30, or one bell of the afternoon watch in the magical Isle of Vashon, and I am here to spend some time with dear friends who happen to own a canal boat. The name of the canal boat is True Love, and I had always proclaimed that True Love was moored in Bungostrasse, but there is no such street as Bungostrasse. Actually, this canal boat is moored on Brouwersgracht, and it belongs to our expat family, friends of family rank, Andy and Cece, who also own a home on the Burton Loop on the magical Isle of Vashon. I mention all of this because the number of people who have stayed in True Love through the generosity of Andy and Cece are many. And they have, over the years, made available True Love as a prize for different raffles. So do-goods have benefited from having True Love as a prize for different events. And Andy and Cece's generosity over the years, not only with True Love, but also with all of the other things that they have done, make me wish that they would be thinking about coming back to America. They are expats, and so my greetings tonight go out to all of Captain Joe's people who are expats, expatriates, people who are American citizens, but who choose to live someplace else, in some other country. And why people do that, I've been an expat twice myself, once when I was just in the beginning of my teen years in Aruba, when my father was working for Esso, now Exxon. And Aruba then was an oil refining place, not a casino place. And then, of course, the second time was when Mary R. and I lived and worked for 3 years in the University of Cambridge, in the city of Cambridge, in the university, and in particular Scott Polar Research Institute. So I've been an expat myself, and I know that when you are an expatriate and you are living in a very desirable place, that you have a constant stream of family and friends who want to come and stay with you. Mary and I had a five-bedroom house in Cambridge, and it was seldom that we did not have a full house of people who were staying with us. And we were always delighted to see them and to spend time with them, and I know that Andy and Cece feel the same way. But I am very grateful for the opportunity because this is the first time that I have come to Amsterdam in many years. And so I have to tell you that I'm sitting here in the living room of Trullo, and I am watching the traffic going by on Bungestrasse, and it is eerie because today the canal boats that use the canals, the ancient canals in Amsterdam, almost all of them are electric. I do not know whether or not some of the older boats that were powered by gasoline or diesel engines have been grandfathered, but everyone that has gone by has been so quiet that it tells me that those boats have been electrified. And some of those hulls are well over 100 years old. Right across from me is a boat that is probably about 125 feet long. It looks to me as if she probably cannot move because I suspect that she cannot be electrified, but she's absolutely beautiful. And, of course, the Dutch are great seafaring people. They have been for centuries. And so I am always hoping that one of these old boats will be gotten underway so that I can watch their seamanship and their ship handling. One of the things that have been promised to me in this visit with Cece and Andy is a visit to the Maritime Museum. Now, there are four things in life that I will do and that I will go a long way out of my way in order to accomplish, and one is a rail trip. Another one is to a cathedral, especially a European cathedral, and in particular an English cathedral. Another one is a crossing by ferry, and the fourth one is a maritime museum. Mary R. would sometimes, I think, try to hide from me the existence of a maritime museum in a place, in a particular place that we were going to go, and I recall in particular that one of the things that I wanted to take her to when I took her to Paris for the first time was the wonderful maritime museum on the River Seine in Paris. Her enthusiasm for that was not nearly as high as mine, and she was ready to leave long before I had accomplished even the beginnings of my time there. So I have been promised a visit to the Maritime Museum here, and I am really looking forward to that. The binnacle list this week is especially for those who made a special effort to come to Norfolk for the Ingham reunion. I've mentioned this before that last week, in my broadcast last week, we were just beginning the reunion and none of the events had happened, and I was not sure all of the people who were going to be able to come. But there were several who were there who had to make a special effort to conquer and overcome their particular physical challenges in order to make that journey. These are important things for all of us because at each one of these, I, as the senior living captain in that ship, Ingham, Coast Guard Cutter Ingham, hull number 35, I am her senior living captain, and it's my responsibility, therefore, to read out the names at the memorial service that we have at each one of the reunions. And each year, that memorial service includes people who I knew well, and in some cases, people with whom I went to sea, shipmates in the literal sense, people with whom I actually went to sea. And it was no different this time, but there were several people there who clearly had to make a special effort to come to this particular reunion. Our next one is in two years. It will be in Key West, which is where the ship is, and any of Captain Joe's people who find their way to the Florida Keys continue on to the bitter end, go all the way to the end of US 1 to Key West, and there you will find the Coast Guard Cutter Ingham, I-N-G-H-A-M, Ingham, hull number 35. You will find her moored in Key West, and there, and she is now a museum ship, and she's turning out to be a very popular attraction. She is a very special ship to me because of the service that she accomplished all of us together during the right after Tet in 1968. So I am using the Binnacle List this week to recognize those people who made that special effort and to require that it is my special feeling, my special urging, and my special command that each one follow the instructions of their particular medical provider so that they will be able to meet when we foregather again for quarters for muster 2 years from now in Key West. One of the things that we accomplished was an agreement that we would take a piece of steel out of our Ingham, cut a piece of steel out of her. I promised that that piece would not be cut out of the bottom, thus opening a hole, but that we would cut a piece of steel out of her, and we would take it over to the next Ingham, which is under construction in Panama City, Florida, and that we would then have that piece of steel welded in, thus providing not only a sense of continuity, but a sense of tradition. Because Ingham W-35, the one that's in Key West, was in the Battle of the Atlantic. She was in Vietnam. She carried out for over 50 years all of the requirements of her commission. I have not counted up how many captains she had, how many commissioning pennants she flew. But I know that there were many of them, and I know that she served reliably, faithfully, and with honor. And so it was our feeling that a piece of her should be taken from her and incorporated in the new ship that's going to carry that same name. And so we're going to make that happen. It was a great time, and it was lovely to be able to visit some of the visits that we had. But one of the things that was especially significant to me was that I was invited by a group of chief petty officers to meet with them and to give them some thoughts about leadership and about not only leadership, but of taking care of your people. And this particular group of chief petty officers had just been advanced. Enlisted people are advanced. Officers are promoted. These chiefs had just been advanced to chief petty officer. And they were collecting information to be used in the ceremonial initiation that all chief petty officers undergo before they're considered to be truly chiefs and members of the chief's mess, colloquially known as the goat locker. And so I was invited to meet with them, and I sat down with them for a little while, and we talked about all of these things. And now you're going to hear me say once again something that I have said many, many times, and I'll say many times again, that the whole business of leadership is not very complicated. It consists of accomplishing the mission and taking care of the people that are given to you and trusted to you to carry out that mission. And both of those things have to happen simultaneously, and both of them have to happen and they have to happen simultaneously. Neither one can exist without the other. And then I always like to bring in the old cavalry dictum the good general always makes sure that his men and his horses are fed before himself. And so we talked about that, and they were all busily writing these things down, because they have to, as part of their initiation ceremony, they have to present documentation of the people that they have talked to learn some of these ideas. And so they wrote all of these things down, and then I signed them and included them in their charge book. But it was a great honor for me to be asked to do this. And I believe that some of my words may have had some significance to some of them. I hope so. I believe so. So anyway, to get here to Amsterdam, one must go through Schiphol International Airport. Here are a couple tips for those of you who feel compelled to travel through Schiphol. The first one is that seize the opportunity to make a head call at every chance, because unlike in most U.S. airports, and SeaTac is a great example of this, there are heads not just sprinkled, but heads tactically located so that you need not go very far before you get to another one. Not so in Schiphol. So as you see one, pass it by not. The second thing is, if you think that in Schiphol you're going to see a sign that says passport control, you are to be denied. Unlike English or British airports, Stansted, and I have used all of the London airports, and all of them have big signs that say passport control, and you don't get to get out until you've, of course, passed through passport control. In Schiphol, there are no such signs. There are lots of signs, and they're all of them big and yellow with black type. But not one of them says passport control. But what they do say is baggage hall and exit. Be not deceived. You do not get to go out of exit without going through passport control. So that head for that sign, but make a head call first, because you're going to be in a queue for a long, long time. So make that head call and then watch for those queues. And be sure you don't get into the line, the queue, that says EU passports. Now, it's a little thing that's happened just in the last couple of years because His Majesty's government of Great Britain and Northern Ireland is no longer in the European Union. All of those Brit passports are now in along with the rest of us. They no longer can queue up in the section that says EU passports. So the lines are bigger and longer. Be ready for that. But once you get out on the other side, you are in the wonderful town of Amsterdam, and I was enfolded in the love of my family, my friends of family rank here. But if you have to go through Schiphol, be ready for, first of all, it must be the largest airport in the world. It must be 10 miles from one end to the other. So be prepared for a long, long walk. This last Sunday, I was asked by Dr. Bruce Hallman, who is one of the Voice of Vashon one of the standards of excellence that we have on the Voice of Vashon. I was asked by him to give a tour for some people from New Zealand. All of Captain Joe's people know that I have a special place in my heart for New Zealand, because when I took my Northwind there on our way to a deep freeze, every one of my crew members, when we were in Wellington, New Zealand, every one of my crew members had a home to go to. And I have just the warmest feelings for everything to do with New Zealand. And I learned that the New Zealand national anthem, so far as I know, is the only national anthem that is sung in two languages. And Maori is the first part that is sung, and then in English. I believe that to be the case. Every time I've heard it, I have never heard it sung in any other way. So these lovely people came to the White House, and we had a wonderful visit together. And I told them my Christmas story, and I'm not going to tell it here because all of Captain Joe's people have to be on board for my Christmas program, in which I tell every year. It has become a tradition on The Voice of Vashon that I tell my Christmas story about how I got a Christmas tree for my North Wind, for the masthead, for my North Wind, and how that came to pass. But because I knew that these people would not be able to hear, or probably would not be able to hear, or maybe they will, because I gave them the details as to how they could listen to this. But anyway, I told the story and about the chief pilot. And my gift from them was that all of these lovely people lined up and they sang me a song in Maori. And there was not a dry eye, at least not my eye was not dry at that. It was just a lovely, lovely time. So I returned from my trip to Norfolk, and I only had a couple days to get ready for this trip to Amsterdam through Schiphol to Truelo. And my sailor, my orange cat, had gone walkabouts. Now, sailor does this in protest of my absences. And he has done it before. And he has always returned. What I think he does is that he gets up into the bushes over the car park of my house, of captain's quarters, and he watches, and when he sees my car drive up, he hunkers down, and when he feels that he has punished me enough for going away, then he reappears. But he's been gone for as long as 5-6 days. Well, he had not returned, and he did not appear for the 3 days that I was in port before I had to turn around and go back out to SeaTac to get on my Delta flight to Schiphol. My heart was bleeding as I got on the airplane, and it remained so until I had a signal this afternoon. Now, we all know that they're just cats, but Sailor, for me, has been a special cat because when the day after Mary R. died, he came up to me and he said, "Captain, I am going to be one of your major helpers and supporters through this time." And so that has been the case. And what he didn't tell me was, if you go away, Captain, I'm going to extract a certain amount of retribution. And that's what he does. So I had a signal today from Marie, and Marie is my friend who takes care of my animals when I'm away. And that signal said, "Sailor has returned." So all is well on that particular front. One of the things that we talked about here several times for all of you Hawaii hands is the big fuel leak that happened in Red Hill the Department of Defense fuel farm just down below Tripler in the Red Hill area, which is also where the Coast Guard has its housing. And you all will remember that there was a big fuel leak, and that the fuel leak was so extreme that the Department of Defense decided to close the facility. Well, not only was it extreme in the sense of a lot of carelessness, but a signal just came to me today as I was putting together my notes for my broadcast tonight that five rear admirals and seven captains have had disciplinary letters put in their records for their particular part in allowing this to happen. That's a lot of rank. Now, all of those admirals are retired, so they're not in a position to get that third star. All of those captains are retired, and they are never going to get their star anyway. But even so, the idea that they would have a punitive, or in some cases what's called a non-punitive letter, a letter of instruction or a letter of caution, there are a number of different grades of that kind of thing, that they would have that inserted in their record. What that also demonstrates, though, is something that many people who have not lived the military life realize, is that if you are an honored retiree, as I am an honored retiree, that you are still part of the service from which you have become an honored retiree, and you are subject to being recalled to active duty. I am ready, actually, to be recalled to active duty. Anytime the commandant wants to send me a signal and says, Captain Joe, all is forgiven, come back on active duty, we have a new icebreaker for you to command. Well, we know that that new icebreaker is a long, long way off. So this is for me today, for me this evening, a really special time. I'm here in a place where I really want to be with people with whom I really want to be and to spend some time with. It reminds me once again that I am the most fortunate of men. And I want all of Captain Joe's people to look at your lives and for you to look at the places where you are the most fortunate of people in your life. And if things are maybe headed south just a little bit, take my words, my instructions, my feelings, my regards, and my commands from the captain's chair to look at what maybe you can do to make the life of somebody else just a little bit better today and tomorrow. All of you remain, as always, in the palm of my hand. So this is your Captain Joe. We never say goodbye. We say until we meet again. And when we were having the closing ceremonies at the reunion of my Vietnam people and of all of the Ingham people, many of them people who served in Ingham after the Vietnam deployment, some of them maybe even before that. In fact, for sure, some of them before that. Some of them, at least one of them, said to me, I'm having trouble walking, and clearly he was having trouble walking, but this time around he had a stick that he was using and he did not use the last time. And he said, I don't know whether I will make the next one. But he said, Captain Joe, I am so blessed to have been a part of all of that during the time, the short time that I was on active duty. Canal boat is just going by, green side light going by right in front of me. What a lovely thing. This is your Captain Joe. We never say goodbye. We say until we meet again. And this is, as always, your Captain Joe up in the captain's chair. I am on station and watching properly.